Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today George Pelicanos. He has just published a novel called The Cut, and he joins us by telephone from, I'm guessing, somewhere in Manhattan.
I am. I'm in my publisher's office in New York near Madison Avenue.
It sounds like you've been having a busy day, George. Were you on WNYC today?
No.
No?
I took the train up this morning. I went around a few bookstores. It's always busy. You just, even if you're not busy in New York, you got to walk real fast and all that stuff and feel like you're busy.
Well, I'm really excited about this new series. You've just started a new series, I'm guessing. I'm guessing this book isn't going to be a standalone.
No, I'm going to do another one at least. I didn't know I was going to write a series, but when I came to the end of the book, and it just sort of felt like it was. And then when my publisher and my editor got a look at it, they said, you know, we'd like some more. So I think there's more where this came from, just because I think the character, there's more to say about this character.
Tell us about this guy.
Well, he is comes from a big family of mainly adopted kids. Multiracial family. His parents are Greek Americans, and he ends up in Iraq as a Marine, fighting primarily or most notably in the Battle of Fallujah. And when he gets home, he really doesn't know what to do, and so he starts working for an attorney downtown, a criminal defense attorney, doing investigative work, which is a sort of a real thing where I'm from D.C. I met a lot of guys who were veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who were doing that kind of work. And I would ask them, well, why are you doing this? Because you've come out of harm's way, and now you're sort of putting yourself in that same situation, though certainly not as intense or violent, but it has the potential. And to a man, these people would tell me, I missed that kind of sort of getting up in the morning and having that sort of purpose, knowing what my day was going to be like. And there's no way that I could come back after that experience and sit behind a desk. And so they were well suited to this type of work. So anyway, this guy Lucas does this. And then he also takes side jobs where he recovers stolen property for people. And he takes a fee of 40% of what he recovers, or a cut, hence the title of the book.
So these guys get hooked on the adrenaline rush, I guess, and the danger.
Well, I just think that they're not ready to just sit behind a desk, or a lot of them didn't want to go back to school. You know, as tough as war is, and this was a very tough war, there's also a feeling that a lot of these guys would say it was the best time of my life. It seems like an odd thing to say. But they enjoy getting up and having that sort of sense of purpose. So, but what happens with this guy in the book is that he takes his job trying to recover some lost packages, which are for a marijuana dealer who's lost some multiple pounds of marijuana. They were stolen. And it seems like an easy job, but he sort of stumbles into a kind of an underworld group of guys who are pretty twisted guys. And so on the one hand, he puts himself into some pretty violent circumstances. But on the other hand, these guys don't know who they're dealing with, because he is an ex-Marine who's a combat Marine. And so he sort of is underestimated by them as well.
And he's got a buddy he can count on who is also a graduate of the University of Baghdad.
Yeah, Marquis, yeah. He's lost a leg in Iraq, and he's a good guy, and he's been a good friend. And there's another guy that he sort of uses, too, was a veteran of Afghanistan. And it's kind of a little group of guys that he goes to when he needs help. But when it really gets intense, he's on his own, and he's very capable.
George Pelicanos joins us. His new novel is The Cut. The FedEx method, I had never heard of this. Is this really going on?
Yeah. It was a trend for a while. Well, actually, it goes back to when I was a younger guy. If you wanted to sell somebody marijuana out of town, you just shipped it FedEx or UPS, and the packages were never checked or anything like that. And of course, there's ways to conceal it, which I discuss, coffee grounds and that sort of thing, so the dope smelling dogs can't detect the marijuana that's in the packages. But what the trend was for a while is that dealers were shipping in marijuana, and what they would do is they would case houses where either the people were every single day without fail were at work, they weren't home, or they had a planned vacation or something like that, and they would ship their product to that address, and the shipper would put it up on the porch, deliver it, mm-hmm. and then you can track it on your laptop where it is to the minute. So then when the FedEx truck left or the delivery truck left, you could then just go take your package off the porch of that unoccupied house, and it was a safe way of doing it. But there were a couple of cases that I had been reading about where these packages were disappearing. And when you come across a situation like that, for a writer, you say, well, I got to put that in a book because that's something that a plot can really turn on.
That's really ingenious because you can. The second you get that package from whoever, you can go onto your computer and you can say it was delivered 5 minutes ago, and then whoever wanted to pick it up could do that if they knew that package was going there.
That's right. It's relatively safe, but it's not safe if somebody knows about it.
Oh.
Somebody knows that it's happening, and so then the package can get intercepted.
So Lucas has this client who is missing some packages, and he gets embroiled in this very complicated situation where just about everybody is a bad guy, and then the innocent get drawn in, as you would expect.
Yep. Yeah. A boy gets that actually Lucas tapped for information gets drawn into this thing, and then that's when all hell breaks loose because he knows that Lucas knows that he screwed up by getting this kid involved. And the boy's life is in danger, and he, and that's when he really takes charge.
And we get another great Pelicanos tour of Washington D.C. here. This is really your turf, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I've never lived anywhere else, and for this book, I was out scouting every day. Spiro Lucas rides a bike, so do I. I'm on my bike every day in the city. And like him, I take, my iPhone now is my tool. I used to take a lot of equipment with me and notepads and tape recorders and this and that. I have one thing I take with me now. So when I go out on my bike or my kayak or I'm out on foot, I can just talk into that thing, take my notes, take my pictures. You have your maps on there and so on. And that's what he does as well. So the locations in this book are all locations that I found riding my bike around the city and walking at night. And there's a scene where a guy is following Lucas, and he kind of traps him in a parking lot of the Emory Methodist Church on Georgia Avenue, which is just a half block away from the 4th District Police Station. And when I was walking there one night, I was in that parking lot, and I said, you know what, it's kind of weird, but there's a cop station right there, but they can't see up here, and neither can any of the cars on Georgia because there's such a pitch going up to this dark parking lot.
Huh.
And I said, well, this would be a great place to kill a man. You definitely would get away with it. And so that's where I staged this fight and this sort of physical confrontation that they have where Lucas takes he's an ex-wrestler from high school, and he sort of takes that and his Marine training, and he puts it to use.
The book is The Cut. George Pelicanos wrote it. It's just been published by Little Brown. And are you on book tour right now? Is that why you're out and about? Or?
Yeah, this is my first day. I'm heading around the country. I will be tweeting, which is a new thing for me. My publisher made me do it. If you want to know where I am on any given night, I'll be tweeting every day saying where I'm going to be, where I'm going to be doing my readings and stuff like that. So that's a good tool.
And what is your Twitter handle?
At Pelicanus.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I noticed you also recently went on to Facebook, George. Was that another publisher ploy?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to call it a ploy, but they asked me to do it, and I was apprehensive because I just didn't. It was the unknown, right?
Uh-huh.
And I got on there, and I've actually been enjoying it, and I've either found or people have found me, folks who I grew up with, went to elementary school with, that sort of thing, and it's been nice, and it's a good way to reach people. You can post reviews. What I do for me is I hear a song that I like, and I'll link it to that site Spotify, and people can listen to the music that I'm listening to. And it's just a good way to interact with people. I'm very impressed with it. I wish I hadn't waited so long to get on there.
Don't you have some kind of a Spotify playlist for this book?
I do, yeah. You can go there and get it. And it's also on my website. If you don't have Spotify, you can check it out. It's my annual tour music list.
That's one of my favorite things about you, George, is you are such a music head. I remember the first time I interviewed you, you gave me a music quiz, and I flunked royally.
Well, I don't know. I do love it still. I love listening to music, and one of the fun things about what I do is that, for a living, is that I get to talk about things like that, not just music, but movies I like and other people's books that I like, and you know, because I'm a fan also, and that's really that really makes this a lot of fun.
And for some of our listeners, they're probably familiar with your work in other formats because you've been involved with a lot of other stuff, including The Wire.
Yes. I was on The Wire for its entire 5-year run. I was also a writer and producer of The Pacific, which was the sequel to Band of Brothers. And for the last 2 years, I've been on Treme, set in New Orleans, another HBO show, with my old cohorts from The Wire. So I have been doing this now for about 10 years, sort of balancing writing novels. And then the other half of the year, I usually work on a TV show now. And it's been, I'm very fortunate. It's just had a lot of fun, and also been very fortunate to have been involved with some shows that I think are pretty good. You know, The Wire is... we just caught lightning in a bottle with that show, and Treme is another show that I'm, you know, proud to be a part of, so it's all good.
A couple years ago, I interviewed one of your colleagues in crime fiction, Lawrence Block, and just in a digression in that interview, he said, you know, we've been sitting at home watching The Wire, and he just was absolutely ecstatic about the program. He absolutely loved it. And just the other day, I gave myself an early Christmas present. I went out and I ordered every episode on DVD, and I haven't opened the box yet, but that's my Christmas present to myself.
Well, it's a good, nice present for me, too, because I get a piece of that action, Vic.
My pleasure, George. I did notice on your Facebook profile, it looks like you're sitting in a pretty nice car, George. What is that car you're sitting in?
I have a Bullitt Mustang, which was Ford made a limited edition in 2008 car, which is a Bullitt replica, and they even went to the degree where the sound that comes from the exhaust, the dual exhaust, is they computerized it to sound exactly like the Bullitt car in the movie.
This is the Steve McQueen Bullitt.
Yes, yeah, wow. It's even the same color. It's Highland green. And Ford only made, and they've pledged only to make that Mustang in Highland Green. They're not going to make it available on any other Mustang. They only made 7,700 of them. There's like a strut over the engine, which tells you which number your car was when it came off the line. And mine was 28. So I'm, you know, I have a lot of fun with that car. It's the kind of thing where when I get in the car, whether I'm just going up to the grocery store or driving down the beach or whatever, every time I do, I'm looking forward to it because it's just an, you know, it's a sweet muscle car. I like it.
You don't park it on the street, do you?
I have a garage for
that.
Yeah.
George Pelicanos joins us. His new novel is The Cut. And I really enjoyed your villains in this. And there's a few of them, but this one guy that's got the little clubhouse, he's a special one.
Yeah, forgot about that. That playpen in the back of the warehouse. Yeah, yeah. He's a really weird guy, and it's, I don't know how else to describe it. He even looks weird. They call him, he's an ex-cop, and when he was on the force, the other cops called him Rooster. He's a black guy, but he's got a sort of a strange coloring to him, and then his hair is sort of rust colored, and he wears it in a sort of a kind of an old fashioned afro. So, you know, he looks like Big Bird or something, but they called him Rooster, and he's a bad person. I mean, most of those other guys in that clan are sort of halfway bad. You know, they're like most people. They've taken some wrong turns. And they made a lot of mistakes and so on, but they're not all through and through. But this guy is awful because he has brought his son into this thing, and he doesn't even love his son. He's using his son because his son has contacts on the police force, and he's just a malignant character. And of course, I had a lot of fun writing a guy like that because he's awful.
And we're not going to give away too much about what goes on there, but when he encounters Lucas, he's definitely encountering the wrong guy, and it's really an action jam-packed sequence there when Lucas is dealing with some of these guys in the end. I thought, man, this is just incendiary stuff.
Yeah, that was I tried, you know, the book is not action from start to finish, so when it comes, I want it to sort of shock you. And he takes them by surprise too, because it's just relentless, and he's fast, he's strong, and he doesn't think twice about what he's going to do to him. So that's why that scene is written like that. It's just sort of like kick the door in and start shooting.
And The Cut. I was wondering about the title for a while, and then I realized that above all else, even though he's involved with criminals in a way as clients, The Cut is really important to him as something symbolic in a way, isn't it?
Well, yeah, he's getting his due. And he's not, you know, this guy walks a thin moral line. He is a good person. He loves his brothers and his brother and he loves his mom, and he's grieving for his father who passed away while he was fighting overseas. But then he has no problem with doing what he's been trained to do and taking what he thinks is his. And so, and honestly, some people have pointed this out, and I don't deny it. I mean, the precursor to this character is one of my favorite characters in crime fiction, which was Travis McGee. It was one of the first crime novels I ever read, The Deep Blue Goodbye. And like McGee, Lucas is sort of a stud. You know, he's a young guy. He likes women. He is in shape. You know, when I say he likes women, he likes them as people, and he also likes to be in bed with them, and he's not ashamed of that, you know? And it was just kind of, it was a nice change of pace to write about a young guy like that for a change, and sort of in the spirit of those McGee novels, which were, you know, physical, flesh, sensual action.
Well, there's definitely a little sensuality in this book, and without really saying much, there's one part where he's with a woman and she says, well, that holds up that particular item, and I thought that was pretty cute, George. I gotta give you credit.
Thanks, sir. Yeah. I have my moments.
Okay so is Derek Strange, is that it? I mean, is he ever going to come back?
Yeah, he's coming back in about 4 months. I wrote a book this summer sort of without even, you know, and I never planned anything anyway, but I sat down and wrote a book with Derek Strange as a one of the protagonists as a young man, 26 years old. It's set in 1972. It's my version of a 70s crime film. They're one of the, you know, the films that I love so much. And it's called What It Was, and it's coming out early next year.
1972. We're going to have some vintage soul music in that one, huh?
Yeah, and some hot muscle cars and some bizarre fashions and some big hair.
And what crime films came out in 72? Was that the French Connection? I'm trying to remember.
French Connection, I think, was 71. But that era, you know, you have that. You have the 7-Ups. You have the original Taken of Pelham 1, 2, 3. Charlie Varick, one of my favorite films with Walter Matthau and Joe Don Baker. The Outfit, which is a Parker adaptation.
Ah.
And there's so many good crime films from that era. Rolling Thunder. I just have a real affinity for those films, and the book is written in that sort of in that style. It's very direct, and the dialogue is, you know, is hard boiled, and it was a good experience to put that out.
So you were channeling. Sounds like you were channeling high school days in a way. There wasn't that about the period you would have been in high school.
Yeah, I've been right in the beginning of high school. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I didn't have to do a lot of research.
Uh-huh.
I remember very clearly what everybody was wearing and what it felt like to be out there.
Yeah, the bell bottoms and the halter tops, those were the days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. George Pelicanos joins us, and his new novel is The Cut. It was just published by Reagan Arthur. He's out on book tour right now. I looked on Amazon this morning. It looks like the book's doing pretty well for you.
Oh, yeah? How much? I didn't check. And get on there. I don't usually do that.
Well, I'm not going to tell you the number. You're going to have to go look yourself. But
you can't control it, so what's the point, right?
Yeah, it looked like it was doing pretty well, but I'm sure the second that we air this interview on the radio, it'll have a spike on Amazon, George.
Okay.
I'm just kidding, but a few years ago, a very famous New Age guru-type person was going to be on this program, and I got a call from his people, and they said, we're going to check Amazon after the interview airs, and if there's not a spike in sales, we probably won't have him on your show again.
That's good incentive for you to give a give a good interview, right?
I'm not kidding you. I was appalled. And this is a new age guy, you know? I mean, come on.
Well,
we're not going to say his name, but it sounds kind of like Deep Pockets Chakra.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it, right?
Sounds kind of like it. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not trying
to, that is.
I'm not trying to give you any clues or anything. So you're saying this Derek Strange book is going to be out this year?
It's going to be out early next year, 2012.
Wow.
Possibly January.
That is quick. Do you frequent? I don't remember you doing two books in a year recently. Have you?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, even when you write them and you turn them in, usually they hold them back for a year anyway. But I think they just wanted to. I think they just wanted to get this one out.
Strike while the iron is hot, I think, is what they're thinking.
Yeah, and it might be a different. They might try something different in terms of the release and something with e-books and with paperbacks. And I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to try to, because it is a. I mean, when I wrote it, I intended it to be almost like a pulp novel, like the kind of, you know, the paperback that you put in your back pocket and you go to the bar and you read it over the course of an afternoon or something like that. So we'll see what they do, but that's the way they're thinking.
And what was the title on that again?
What It Was.
What It Was. Okay. Well, What It was once upon a time we didn't have iPhones. We didn't have electronic book readers. I know you just gave a great endorsement for your iPhone there a little earlier. Don't tell me you read books on that thing.
I never have, and I don't own a device for reading books. That's just me. If books disappear, if everything goes the way of electronics, you know, I'm going to stop writing because I didn't get into this racket to write something that gets shot across the airwaves or however they do it. You know, I need a book in my hand, and I'm not interested if there's not books, so that's just me.
Well, knowing you, George, you're going to have a big stash of books just in case, just like I'm guessing you probably still have some of that classic vinyl stashed away.
Mm-hmm.
Your record collection?
Basement.
Uh-huh. Those sides that probably haven't even been reissued on a CD.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Don't throw your vinyl out because, first of all, it sounds better. And secondly, it might not even be available. You know, those albums are priceless.
You know what I like about my old vinyl? When I listen to it, I'll say to myself, okay, I'm about ready to hear that pop right here that I remember from high school. It's still right there, that same pop.
Right.
I love that. I'm not being sarcastic.
No, I know. It's part of the. It becomes part of the record. You know.
Literally.
It's customized.
Well, George, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and maybe if I'm lucky, Marlena will hook me up for an interview for the next book.
It sort of depends on how this one goes. I think we're gonna check Amazon when I get off the phone and see if anything's happened, if there's any activity.
Good. Well, we're taping this, so it's not airing right now, but be sure that you wish her a happy birthday, because 1 week from today is her birthday, and the only reason I know that is because it's also my birthday.
She told me, sir.
Okay.
I knew that.
So you make sure you do something nice for her.
I will.
And go Nationals. I was hoping they would break 500 this year. they overpaid for Jason Wirth. I'm sorry, but man, that closer, he's for real.
Oh yeah, and we're just keep an eye on us next year. We got a lot of guys, prospects that we signed that will be coming up in the next couple of years. That I think we did the right thing. We did what Tampa Bay did a few years ago, and when they had to, you know, when they really did it, you know, it was because they had all these young guys that they had brought up through the farm system and stuff. So. We got something.
Hey, this Morse kid, he's a hot little hitter.
Yes.
I like him.
Yep. Bryce Harper.
Oh, well, didn't he hurt himself?
No, you're thinking of Strasburg.
No, I knew Strasburg did. I thought Harper hurt himself in the minors. Yeah, Strasburg's coming back. They might get him to pitch next week.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm following you. I'm following your team, George.
I can tell you are.
Well, George, thank you so much.
All right, Vic. Nice talking to you, man.
You've been listening to Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been George Pelecanos, and his new novel is The Cut, and we'll have another book coming out here shortly, first of next year. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. If you ever miss an interview on the Book Nook, you can go to the WYSO website at wyso.org, and we have an archive there of every interview we've had on the program over the last year. You can listen to them whenever you want via podcast. And while you're at the WYSO website, we hope that you will pledge your support to this public radio station. Your membership support is so important as we go into our fall fund drive. Why don't you make that pledge? And thanks. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.